Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists this week include Corey Bratlin. He's with Kleist Commodity Advisors out of Willow Lake, South Dakota. Ellen Dearden is here from AgriView in Morton, Illinois. Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain. He's in Gallatin, Tennessee. And Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas has joined us. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can also purchase your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois. And this year we've got a really good conference scheduled. We'll have six commodity analysts with us, three University of Illinois professors, along with a group of folks from Anheuser-Busch, McDonald's, Clarkson Grain, and Syngenta to talk about contracts and different characteristics that big companies are looking for all the way through to the commodity farmer, not necessarily just to the non-GMO or the organic, but all the way through to the commodity farmer if you're interested. The cost is just $40. Make sure you buy those tickets now at willag.org or see all the details at farmassetsconference.com. Now let's begin our conversation. I think I'll start today, Corey Bratlin, with you at Kleist Commodities there in Willow Lake, South Dakota. Are you in an area that's been snow covered? I know it's probably been quite wet there where you are too.
Very, very wet. We actually, I shouldn't say it too loudly, but we've kind of dodged the snow. We've had a little skiff here and there, but 50 to 100 miles south of me has actually had snow. And obviously you get up 50 to 100 miles north of me, you get in North Dakota, they've had quite a bit of snow. But right where I'm at, we've dodged a bullet, but we've gotten quite a bit of rain.
And farmers back in the field?
Yeah, we got in late Tuesday night. We had a little corn picking going on, but you know we've got a fair amount of our soybeans left to go, and we've got going back to the field late Tuesday night, and we've been running pretty hard the last 2 days, and we're gonna get a lot of it. The weather looks very good here for the extended, you know, extended maps anyways look very good, so we're gonna get the lion's share of it knocked out in the next 5 to 7 days.
I know farmers were worried about both crops. Soybeans more than corn as far as it it involves what might happen with shatter and some yield loss. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I've talked with some customers down in along the South Dakota, Nebraska, and the Minnesota-Iowa line where they had anywhere from probably 3 to 4, maybe some spots of 6-7 inches of snow. And overall, the snow melted really good. They're back in the field going pretty hard here now. It sounds like, there's maybe a little bit of shatter, a little bit of, some of the pods are popping open. But it sounds like that the loss has been pretty minimal. Now, right here locally where I'm at, I'm kind of, east central South Dakota. We are seeing very little, if any, yield loss with the rains. And then you get north of us where they had a little heavier snow. Snow was stuck around a little while longer. They had probably 3-4 days of, snow because it was, 8 to 10 inches or so, even more up in North Dakota. They're seeing a little bit of yield loss, but all in all, I guess I think we're coming out of it pretty darn good.
Hey, Mike Zuzlo, I kind of want to go through the same set of questions with you. You're there in Atchison. You would be close to the northwest corner of Missouri, southeast corner of Nebraska, and the southwest corner of Iowa. All would have a little different take, I would think, and I don't know whether you've driven through that part of Missouri that was drought-ridden and can tell me more about what that looks like as far as yields today. But what are you hearing from producers in your area and those that you talk to across the Midwest?
Yeah, in our area, we're just getting started, Todd, whereas as Corey talked about, up towards the Nebraska-Kansas border and even into central Nebraska where the rains weren't as heavy, they've been going for a couple days now, and yields haven't dropped off much. There have been a couple reports as you get east, as you go towards Omaha and the Iowa-Nebraska border, that there's some damage there. 3 to 5 bushels has been heard quite a bit. Some, I guess, minor reports or few reports of as much as 10 bushels off, and this is on soybeans. I think the fear is that if we get a second wave of weather that comes in that slows us down again another week, that all of a sudden we're up against late October, 1st of November, and then it gets, you know, more and more difficult to get out more than 1 or 2 days a week. I don't think the farmers around here are super nervous yet. They're certainly wanting to get after it. They'll be nervous after Halloween, I think.
Yeah, Drew Lerner talked about that during the closing market report on Wednesday afternoon, that he looked out into that early November, was really concerned that if we got there, that producers might not be able to return to the field at all. So it's an interesting look at the weather and what might happen as we move into the month of November, of course. Ellen Dearden, you're there in the Peoria, Illinois area. Producers should have been moving quite a bit in that area, but they were stalled for a while. What are conditions on the ground like for you? And have you talked to anybody in northern Illinois, too?
Yeah, we were stalled here in the Peoria area for a good 2 weeks, and guys got back into the field on Wednesday late, and there's been quite a bit of truck traffic. I think that hiatus did allow some of these elevators to clear out corn, so they're have room for corn and or soybeans now. But I would say right in this neighborhood, there's very little corn standing. There's maybe half or a little more of the beans still to be combined.
And then finally, and I don't know whether you will have been out and how much crop you may have seen in your area, Tennessee, southern Indiana, parts of Kentucky, all move much faster than the rest of the nation because they're in so much earlier, Joe. And if not, just give me a quick recap of what you think's been happening in the marketplace for corn this week.
Crops down here, we're in good shape for most of the year in the southeast. We're not going to be as good as we were last year. I don't think we did record yield in a lot of the southeast part of the country last year. But in general, it's been okay. We had a ton of rain here this week, so anything that hasn't been harvested is going to be delayed. In general, I mean, you know, if you're asking about markets and market's direction, I think that's a maybe slightly different conversation. I think that the harvest delays and all the rain that we saw and the snow that we saw, I think it was a short-term friendly factor. But I think in the grander scheme of things, we've got some much bigger negative factors that more than offset that.
Things like what?
Well, the trade war. Do you want to start there? I think that is a dark cloud over all of these markets right now. It's going to have a significant impact on the acreage rotation next year. We had a bull story in the corn market. We probably don't have as much of a bull story right now if we're to assume that acreage increases 3 or 4 million next year because of these soybean prices, which are just depressed and really don't seem to have any sort of story right now. Soybean exports are lagging. We saw a very poor export sales report this morning. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of analysts are starting to question whether or not we can hit even this revised USDA export projection. So we've got a lot of problems in these row crop markets, big picture.
Hey, Corey, let me come back to you because you are in some of those areas, and Mike, you too, but in those areas where they would be trying to sow wheat for the winter crop, this delay create much of a problem, and what are they talking about in the way of acreage shifts in that part of the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here in South Dakota, you know, we're in general where the winter wheat is seeded and stuff, we saw some increase in wheat seedings here for the winter wheat crop. And, you know, the spring wheat will get, you know, we'll see what the weather is next spring. We'll kind of dictate that if we don't have, you know, heavy snow packed, you know, real late in the spring. But, you know, I expect wheat acres to be up on both winter wheat and spring wheat up here in South Dakota and in North Dakota. Right now, eastern part of South Dakota, right where I'm at, we don't have a lot of winter wheat like we had, you know, 5, 10 years ago. But, you know, this delay of soybeans, definitely we like to put the winter wheat in that soybean stubble. You know, that definitely delay. We usually like to have it, rule of thumb is by the 1st of October. Well, it's the 18th, and we're just getting a good, you know, run of these beans, although we'll get them knocked out fast. But I expect a the initial guess is that we'll see wheat acres up maybe a million or so, you know, in the Dakotas here, and then all kind of coming at the expense of soybeans, and corn acres will be up as well.
Yeah, the corn wheat rotation doesn't happen out there simply because of disease in wheat following corn, so it's always after soybeans. Mike Suslow, I know you're a long way from what I would consider wheat country anymore, because that's, I think, in mostly the central and then the south western corner of Kansas. But what are you hearing from producers there?
Yeah, the producers I work with out there are suggesting that they're going to keep on the wheat pretty hard. And I think this is where our area is quite a bit different from Corey's, because he has had such a bad issue with the basis and not even being able to get bids in North Dakota for beans. And, you know, it's just been a tough time for the beans up there in the Dakotas. And here, I think producers are actually looking at bigger wheat acres, and then they're going to put beans in right behind that if they can get the moisture levels up to be able to justify it. But Kansas came in at 62% planted this week on Monday's report. That compared to 40% last year. I suspect that we made some headway because we have been relatively dry in the western part of Kansas the last few days, and it started to warm up. So I think there'll be a lot of planters rolling this weekend as long as we don't get rained out. But the economics out here, and I would say even talking to two or three Illinois and Indiana clients this week, the economics for 2019, I would argue that the bean acres could be up again and at the expense of corn, just because of the fertilizer and diesel prices and just the cost side of the equation. Given, you know, what Joe's talking about with the trade wars, every banker I know is asking about that right now.
Well, Ellen, I was going to ask you a different question, but let's continue with maybe acreage. Producers in Illinois, in Indiana, parts of Iowa, very much concerned about what their acreage should look like next week based off the trade war and or what their bankers are telling them?
I think the banker comments are going to prevail all through the winter. Most of the guys that I talked to said they're tired of having seed salesmen come and talk to them about their seed needs for next year at this stage of the game with crops still in the field. I have noticed that the St. Louis wheat bids for July delivery have been rather strong. The Ohio River bids remain pretty strong too. So I think that may be an influential decision to increase wheat acres. And certainly that wheat-bean combination can, in the soft red winter wheat acre areas, could be a good bet for this upcoming year.
And Illinois had historically, and it's been a long time since I've looked, been the largest wheat producer to the east of the Mississippi River. Of course, that would be all in soft red winter wheat. And then Indiana follows not very far behind on its heels, if I also remember correctly, on that particular issue. I want to stay with you, Ellen, for just a bit, because earlier in the week we had a little pop in the soybean market that on Monday, by the time we got through Thursday afternoon, we'd taken all of those gains away and a bit more. Does this concern you very much? And should producers, it's late now, but should they have taken advantage of it?
Well, I think we can see opportunities to get back to those 100-day moving averages. You know, we were above those for a couple of days, and I think that did spark a little money flow back into the bean market. And as you pointed out, that was all taken away late in the week. My gut feeling is that we're going to see a pretty bouncy bean market, but the general bias, I would agree with Joe, the general bias is just to sell rallies on the beans for a while. It seems to me that something will spark a bean rally, but who knows what that's going to be. We did see pretty good strength in the meal this week, and that's supportive to the beans.
Hey, Joe, so we're concerned about soybeans. Are you concerned about corn as well?
Yeah, I'm concerned about corn because I see excellent demand. That's great, but the way that the balance sheets work out, the soybean market is just the corn market's worst enemy. And if the farmer really decides to plant 3 or 4 million acres of corn next year, and that's what a lot of analysts are discussing, that very possibility, it's going to be really hard to knock down that corn carryout. So I guess I'm just kind of the opinion that the corn market stays in the same range that it's been in for the last 4 years. Spot month futures have been $3 up to about $4.40 since mid-2014. I don't see any reason why we break out of that anytime soon.
And Mike Susilo, speaking to that range, do we have time and for the 2019 corn crop to market it? And we haven't really talked much about marketing that on this show at all. Just waiting on the acreage shift and just the natural moves of the marketplace, we don't really begin to think about that a whole lot until we get to March.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it could come earlier this year. And I'm putting, obviously, as usual, a lot of hope and analysis on the wheat market to find its low here very, very soon. I would even argue before the November report. I would not want to see lead month wheat take out 505 on a weekly close. It could go below that because there's a gap at 503.5 on a daily continuation chart that it wouldn't bother me to get that filled, but I'd want it to snap back right away. And mainly because I think Russia is running out of wheat. And if they're not, then it's going to be harder for the corn market to find a friend if Joe's right about what's going on with the soybeans. And I think this is where our price, including freight into Egypt versus Russia or the Ukraine, is only about $9 a ton more expensive out of the U.S. Gulf for soft red wheat. We're there as far as competitiveness. All we need is some political will and some tighter supplies in Russia that both of those work together to we start to kick in the higher demand side. The ag attaché this week took the wheat production down in Russia below what the USDA just gave us on the WASD. The head bean counter at USDA was at a conference in London, said the wheat exports for the United States are going to perk up. If these things are correct, we should have the wheat market again finding support after 4 or 5 years and giving the corn support with it, and mainly through the food channel and not being a feed grain.
Hey, Corey, a question about corn here. In your area, in Iowa, Minnesota, the Dakotas, corn doesn't move as often out because it's consumed either by livestock and or by the ethanol plants. Has your basis level been pretty decent this year?
Yes, this year compared to normal, we've got processors around here are running low 50 under basis on corn, which it sounds horrible, but a year ago we were probably looking at 70, 75 under. And it's just, the demand is stronger. I think this drug out harvest for us up here anyways has definitely helped, where we kind of got to start on harvest. We had a 2-week delay that helped kind of chew through some of those bushels. So, we're seeing a little bit better rail market as well. We don't see the competition we are out of the Bakken with the oil field. So, we're sending trains out to the PNW, decent bids out there. And then, it always helps us when this corn harvest, when we see Illinois and the southern states in the part of the Midwest anyways, they start to wrap up harvest, that has a strong influence on our basis. And we are seeing basis levels look a little firmer up here over the last week, 10 days.
Alan Dearden, does that do the opposite effect here in Illinois and states east of the Mississippi River? Because and opposite meaning from the soybeans, because that's all backed up right to the Illinois River, and there's nothing going out the PNW, and basis levels have just been awful. But it would seem to me that there might be some help for producers in our part of the world if consumption is going really well out west.
Yeah, we're starting to see some basis improvement in Illinois and Indiana, and it's primarily being led by processor demand. I think the processor thought he would get a lot booked, and once this crop got put away, or most of the crop got put away, that was the end of movement. So I think elevators and processors in particular caught a little bit short bought, and it's they may have stuff bought for December delivery, but not here for the second half of October.
Okay, let's deal with corn first, and I want maybe each of you to think about this a little bit. Joe Vaklovic on the cash grain side, and you can tell me about some protection if you want to buy it back, but producers who have to move grain not in their own bins, or even if they have it in the bin, what kinds of things do they need to think about as they look forward to pricing out those unpriced bushels, either in commercial storage or on farm?
Reownership is an uphill battle in a market when you've got a lot of carry. You could buy back December futures or options, which expire around Thanksgiving. You don't have a ton of time there. So if you get one big downdraft on a bearish report or on some sort of trade news or whatever it is, I mean, you're going to be out of luck and you're really throwing good money after bad. You can go out to March, but then you're fighting that carry. And in these bear markets, you know, your deferred contracts kind of tend to come down to where your previous spot month contract left off. So, I mean, I think reownership is a viable option, and I'd like to say that that's the way to go. It's just, it's an uphill battle. It's a very difficult thing to accomplish. I'm kind of mixed on what I'd advise right now, given that the market's already rallied so far from the lows. I'm not sure that that's my favorite strategy.
Mike Zuzulo?
I guess I differ a little bit with Joe on in terms of buying breaks in corn. I think the fact that China has the tightest stocks of corn since 2006 and that world carryover, excluding China even, is the tightest we've seen in 5 or 6 years. And, you know, you go to coarse grains total, you're talking about the lowest in, you know, 10 plus years. I do think there's a fundamental story there in corn. I'm respective of the trade issues that Joe's talking about. I can see where he's coming from with all of them being lumped together in terms of the commodity funds. But I guess I feel like that the cash market has put a low in, as long as I'm right about the wheat, and that you sell rallies, otherwise you hold on. I'd be much more nervous about the soybeans at this stage.
Corey, from your perspective?
Yeah, just going to reiterate, same with stocks as what Mike and Joe had. But, you know, I am liking to own corn a little bit on break, so, okay. You know, we were just coming off for a rally. You get this market to break 15 cents or so, I'd be interested in it. But, again, if I'm going to be selling, you know, 10, 15-cent pops as well. If I've got cash grain in the bin, what am I doing? I'm hedging that carry, locking in the carry out to March or May or the July. And as soon as I see the basis snap a little bit, you know, 10 cents or so from where we're at harvest levels, I'm taking it. I'm not getting greedy. I think the yield with the cash price of in the low, you know, 320s to 340s cash price here locally in the Dakotas, with my yield, most guys can keep the money together and live to fight another day.
And Ellen Dearden.
Well, I've been relatively friendly to corn. I think this rally is played out. I would agree with Corey. I'm selling the carry in this market. When you got these carrying charge markets, I don't think there's a lot of incentive to buy calls.
And on the soybean side, where do you stand, Ellen?
Bean side, we've been sellers on these kinds of rallies. I don't know. I think that you've got risk in the board and you've got risk in the basis in beans. So I don't know how many beans I want to hold. As I said, if anything is going to be a surprise, it'll be a meal-led rally in the beans, but I don't see it coming right here.
How about the rest of you? Maybe Corey.
Yep. Soybeans too. It's hard to have ownership of it. To me personally, if someone made me do it, I guess I'd probably go out to the May options, buy a call, sell a call, do some type of a bull call spread. It gets me through the planting and so on. What I really worry about is what could be friendly to the market is that nobody is selling beans today. Everybody's storing it. What's friendly today becomes negative, you know, 2-3 months down the road when we need cash flow and producers start to move it.
You know, I feel like we're getting closer. I think Ellen made a great point about the meal being the leader, because the Chinese meal's been the leader, and that's been since January of this year. I kind of feel like we're getting back to that January, February time period. I'm not a very strong technician from a standpoint of relying too heavily on it, because I like the supply-demand fundamentals and bringing those two together. But I think the technicals in the meal are extremely powerful. And if you take out this week's high, that 327.50, 327.70 level, and you take out a major moving average that we bumped up against earlier this week, I think you need to come back in on some longs if you're dumping them right here, right now, and play the technicals. Because if we can go higher right here, right now, in the midst of what we're dealing with China, and it's led by the meal, I think there's something to be said that this thing's got some room to go.
I can't tell you anything friendly about the soybean market from a fundamental standpoint. I mean, you're looking at the possibility or perhaps probability of a billion bushel carryout following the 18-19 marketing year. A lot of people think USDA is still too high on these exports. Trade war is a total wild card. I think we're in a bad spot. I think both sides think they have the upper hand, and I think that that can lead us down a bad path. And I think that this thing could become extended. You know, the other problem that we really fail to mention when we talk about beans, everybody talks about the trade war, but we've just overproduced beans, and we keep increasing acreage, we keep increasing yield. That's just as big, if not a bigger problem. Carrying the market's your friend. Hate to start advising sales for next year at these prices, but it may not be a terrible idea if you get some sort of rally in here.
Well, let's get a final word now from each of you. Ellen Dearden from AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Let's start with you this afternoon.
The money flow is worth a watch. We've been short the corn now during the course of this past week. Funds bought the corn, so I think that's worth watching. But this week was really about crude. The crude oil just really fell apart. We've had 1, 2, 3 weeks down in the crude market. $68 looks like a supportive area, but we're sitting right there.
Corey Bratlin, your final word?
Yep. Keep yourself in a very good cash flow position. Sell these rallies. Sell the carry. Basis improves, you know, 10, 15 cents from these harvest levels, maybe 20 cents, especially on soybeans. We will see a natural appreciation of that, but we've got a record supply. Like I say, we're talking, you know, close to a billion bushel carryout on soybeans, you know, 885, I think was USDA's last number. You know, even if that yield would come down, even one full bushel, you're still talking north of 800 million bushels. That's a lot of big supply. So keep yourself in a good cash position. Sell on rallies versus having to sell when you absolutely need the money. So,
Joe Vaklovic?
Keep an eye on the corn market for the next couple of years. December 19 corn above $4, December 2020 corn above $4.10. I mentioned earlier that the market's been confined spot month futures to a range of $3 to $4.40 essentially for 4 years now. Anything you've sold in the December futures 4 years running has been a good sale, and I think you run into one of two scenarios. If we stay in this kind of bear market back and forth type deal here, I think there will be plenty of carry to be captured on anything sold above $4. You'll probably be able to turn that into a 420 number at some point. And if the sale's early and you turn into bull market territory and we finally break out of this range, well, then you're going to have a lot more to sell anyway. So I think that's certainly something to consider on rallies. If you get these 19 back up to 410, these 20 up to 420, not a terrible idea to get started.
And finally, Mike Zuzolo.
You know, Todd, I think Friday could be a really big inflection point for the trade from the macro standpoint, commodity investment and the balance that they keep going into the end of the fourth quarter. We've got China's GDP figures late Thursday night, early Friday morning. This comes on the heels of the Fed and their minutes giving the dollar a bounce and keeping its 100-day moving average intact. We're up against some really major support in the Chinese yuan. If it goes through 7 to the U.S. dollar, I think that's a real issue that the trade's going to have to contend with. If we can get through this week with the type of price action we've seen and not do any technical damage, we may still have some inflationary buying to see the rest of the quarter.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org and listen to the whole of our programming anytime you would like. You'll also find a way to purchase your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference there, or just visit farmassetsconference.com. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Corey Bratland of Kleis Commodity Advisors out of Willow Lake, South Dakota, Ellen Dearden from AgriView in Morton, Illinois, Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee, and Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.